Welcome to the APCDA podcast, season 5, Career Journeys. I'm here with my co-host, Samantha Ng. Hi, Sam. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and I'm really excited about today's episode because it's after watching his TED talk, I'm very inspired by what he does.
Yeah. We've just spoken to Jimmy, and what were some of the things that stood out for you in this discussion with him?
A couple of things, but if I will have to narrow it down, I think the first one is a very broad perspective of moving away from charity and working towards an impact building community enterprise. That to me was very refreshing because I haven't thought about it in that context, like charity and impact. I have never really associated them. And when he articulated it out during his sharing, I felt like actually it makes a little bit more sense now to think of it that way. So that was one thing that I took away. Another thing that I took away, which was closer to heart, because as a career practitioner, we are constantly in touch with individuals, right? And sometimes I come across a practitioner who probably get used to the flow and forget that every individual client is different. So he reminded me that it's a privilege to witness each and everybody's transformation. So it was very remarkable. I felt very privileged in the whole session listening to him. And yourself, Felicity?
Yeah, I felt really privileged too. I know he's such a busy person, but what I also really love the practical side of the support that he provides and how amazing it is that it really started, his social enterprise started very much by happenstance, right? Here he was, he went to Vietnam for a work trip and then he had a bit of time afterwards and he'd walk around the streets and talk to these street kids and how just helping them to get a bowl of noodles led to him now creating this social enterprise where they train 350 students, former street kids, in hospitality skills. And I think it's around restaurants and hotels and the like, and that this started 26 years ago. It's incredible that one person can make a difference with one person, and then it grows so much. And what I really like from this was about the lessons that he spoke about. So the first thing was investing in people, and the second one was that moving away from charity that you mentioned just then. And his advice: live a life with purpose.
And be happy.
And be happy. Yeah,
so
you're
important.
Right.
So important to have fun in the journey as well.
Yeah. All right. So I think our listeners, our viewers are going to really enjoy this discussion with Jimmy.
Definitely.
Hello, everyone. My name's Felicity Brown. And I would like to welcome you to episode 4 of season 5 of the APCDA Career Journeys podcast. And with me is my co-host, Samantha Ng. Hi, Sam. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm really excited for today's episode.
Yeah, me too. All right, let's jump straight into it and meet Jimmy Phan. Jimmy was born in Saigon, Vietnam, and was raised in Sydney, Australia. 26 years ago, he founded Koto, No One Teach One, which is very famous in Vietnam. It was Vietnam's first social enterprise and also co-founded Viet Harvest. In 2013, he was honoured as a member of the Order of Australia, AM, for his significant contributions to the community, particularly towards marginalised children and youth in Vietnam. Recently, Jimmy's been honoured with the Australian Alumni Award 2025, which recognised his significant impact as a leader in social enterprise. He also received an honorary Doctor of Business Administration and Management from RMIT University, Vietnam. Now, I know there's a lot more, Jimmy. That's just some of the highlights that I found. So welcome to our podcast today. It's really our great pleasure to have you join us. And I would like to hear a bit more about who you are as a person. Like, deep down, what fascinates you? What drives you to all these amazing achievements?
Thank you, Felicity. Thank you also to, and hi to Sam. Thank you to APCDA for having me. And so, greetings from Vietnam, first of all, everyone, to all the listeners. So, my journey is, let's start off with where I was born. I was born in actually in Ho Chi Minh. This is where, during a time where we call it the American War. And so, like a lot of people who fought on the wrong side. So, in the pretty much the beginning of the 70s, people were just scrambling to leave the country and settle in a new places. So you have France, Australia, US, and all that. And my family was one of them. I come from a very large family, so I'm the youngest. So my mom's Vietnamese and my father's Korean, but I look like a Maori. So go figures. But I grew up in a very lucky country, Australia, of course. And that's where I got most of my education. And a lot of Australians would have values of always fighting for the underdogs and all that. That was very instilled in me at a very young age. And part of that is my parents, of course, as well. They instilled values and all that in me. And so I came back. I work in the travel industry. So I came back in the early, sorry, 1996. And for anyone who know Vietnam in 1996, we don't even have traffic lights. And most people were riding on bicycles. And we were just literally started the renovation policy. And a lot of people, 75% were under the ages of 25 years old, and 70, 80% are rural. So we were desperately poor, I guess, and considered a third world country. I came back during that time, and that's where it changed my life, Felicity. So I met a couple of street kids that I called the walk that changed my life. And there began my journey in 1996. So I've been in Vietnam since then until now. So I spend now, I consider myself now more Vietnamese in the sense that I've lived in Vietnam longer than I have in Australia.
So you said you were working in the travel industry when you came back to Vietnam. What brought you back here? Was it work or something else?
Was work, yeah. So I work for a travel wholesaler in Sydney, and they sent me back for the first time. And to look at hotels and trips and all that kind of stuff as well. And upon completing that trip, I went for a walk. And in those days, so anyone who'd been in Ho Chi Minh would know that there was a lot of street kids selling coconuts. So they're walking around, and you can see it on the feet is they have the blisters and the ulcers and all that kind of stuff. And they walk literally for 15, 20 kilometers a day. And at night, they'll put their trolley up on the treetop because they're afraid of being beaten up and all that kind of the whole package. When you're street kids, they shower next to an open sewer, which is in a river. And they met me. And believe it or not, Felicia, they had this incredible smile of resilience, so saying that I won't be defeated by life. And so I spent the next 2 weeks taking them and 60 other street kids. Because word got around town that this new sucker was in town, and he was taking you to have pho, which is our national dish, and for an extra 5 cents. And those days, you can actually have Coca-Cola as well. So that was a real treat to have the sugar rush, and that's 2 weeks is the numbers just increasing, and that's, at that point was a I had a very important decision to make. I could be that change that I want to see in the world, or I can say that was very tragic. I'm going to go home, send money back, and do the whole thing. I decided I want to be that change, and came back 3 months later, read two books on Vietnam, couldn't speak a word of Vietnamese, had $200 in my pocket, a job with Intrepid Travel, which is as a tour guide, and began my journey.
So when you went to Vietnam for your work there, did you have any inkling this was going to be a trip that would change your life?
I am always indebted and very grateful to Intrepid Travel because when I went back and met those three kids, I decided I want to come back. I went and applied for the job. And when I applied for a job, the founder, co-founder, Jeff Manchester, he said to me when he did the interview, "Why you want to go back to Vietnam?" I said, "Because I saw a whole bunch of street kids I want to be able to help." And his immediate reply was, "We'll help you." And they did. They've been super, a big supporter of Kodo. And 30 years, sorry, tw on our 20th anniversary, I went back to Melbourne with Intrepid, and they're so big now. And I literally, when I told the story, I literally broke down and cried because I said that at a time when no one believed in you, they did. And you had nothing, you don't know anything. Mostly, you don't know what you're doing. You just have this incredible burning desire to make a difference. You have no experience in development, you have no experience in hospitality, you have none of that. And your only guiding light was this incredible inkling or this fire within that said, I want to come back and make a difference.
Wow, it's such an incredible story. You mentioned your parents that instilled values in you. What, tell us a bit more about those values.
Mom was a product of a street kid herself. So she was born in a very tough time during after the French left Vietnam. A lot of the time where there was a lot of unrest, I guess, in Vietnam, when the division between the north and the south and all that kind of stuff. So mom was actually from the north and she moved down south. And that's where she met my father. And she raised six children. And the time where she built her wealth. And at the height of the war, she lost everything, you know, and then to start as a refugee and all that kind of is a really tough time. And she's a person that couldn't read or write. And to take her to both my master graduation at RMIT in Melbourne and also in RMIT in Ho Chi Minh, where she sat, and I dedicate this whole academic to her to say that someone who never know what it feels like to be in a classroom. And then finally, to see your son be able to reach the highest academic qualification there is, it's an incredible feeling, and for her anyway. And so my dad is quite an educated gentleman. And actually, on the 23rd of last month, we celebrate his 30th anniversary of his passing. So my father passed away 30 years ago, and my whole family came to celebrate his life. So yeah, so both of them lived an incredible life of just. Well, I guess my mom has been very proud of her heritage, and my father is always this very generous, giving guy, right? So I remember selling chocolate, raising money for World Vision when I was growing up, or working in the canteen, or volunteering at the church, and all that kind of stuff. So all these values that I grew up not actually noticing how important it is until this much later in life. And you realize that this is all the things that your parents instill in you that was very important, that you are who you are because of that values.
Yeah, great. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing at the moment with Koto and Viet Harvest and anything else that you happen to be doing, like what problems you're solving and what do you love about what you do?
Sure. So when I started this, I didn't come in with the intention, didn't come to Vietnam with the intention of starting this huge organization. I wanted to make a difference. So when I started the journey, it took me about 3.5 years of giving, I guess, kids that I see in Cambodia, in Vietnam, in Thailand, anyone that I see disadvantaged or underserved, I would give them money. So in a way, I gave them fish every day, and I forgot to teach them how to fish. And then it was 3.5 years later, the same kids, the nine street kids that I supported and rented house and put them through English classes and all that kind of stuff. They were postcard sellers and shoe shiners. And they told me that after 3.5 years, that everything I've done for them up until then, they've been basically taking me for a ride because why not? It was a free, they call me the fat turkey behind my back. Understandably, because they people who made them promises and then left. So so immediately when you see someone with an opportunity, of course you're going to grab it with two hands. Instead of saying to them that forget it, I'm really upset, I can't believe you used me, all that kind of stuff, I did the opposite. I said, okay, I understood why you did it. Now let's work towards giving you a fishing rod so you learn how to fish for yourself. And thus began the idea of opening something that's a bit more tangible for them. And I went everywhere in search, and they couldn't register me because in those days, you can only either be an NGO or you're a business. There's no such thing as a social enterprise. But for me, is when I have a whole bunch of street kids who are grade four, the obvious thing is to give them a marketable and a very tangible skill that they can learn by doing. And hospitality, because of my background in tourism, my background was obviously I needed an output. So I opened the first sandwich shop, where I took Uncle Toby's white wings and made poppy seed cake and bought a bread maker and all that kind of stuff and teach them the best way I know how. And then from that small tiny sandwich shop in 1999, we grew to the organization that we are today. And the lesson learned is there's always a point of pain along your journey, definitely, because it's the only way that you can become resilient. As long as you're resilient, that's the only way you can become stronger. And because it's just through all this falling down that you learn from this as well. So every journey, I'm very grateful for all the things I've gone through. Because when I started this, there's no social enterprise. So I was under this huge microscope of doubt. Why is he doing a business? So he must have agenda. He's working with a whole bunch of kids that, that he's, what is his motive? He's extending this program for 2 years when vocational training was seen very lowly discarded in those days. They don't need to invest in people that long. So everything I did in those days was always under either criticism or a lot of, I guess,
Suspicion.
suspicions, challenges, all that kind of stuff. And that at the few went into the year 2000 after 1 year of our Kodo, we had Bill Clinton came for a historic visit and he came to Kodo, which is then at even more few that I was seen as a CIA. So all that kind of at that. But I'm so grateful because then I go through all this vetting of who I am, what I do, why I'm here, and what my agenda is, all that throughout this journey. And I'm very grateful for that. You say that the last 25 years, Felicity, what you've learned, and that kind of, there's so many lessons to learn, both as a participant, number two, as a leader as well.
Yeah, so tell us about some of the lessons.
Some of the lessons, the first lessons is that if you want to invest in anything, you invest in people. When I first did this, I always knew there was this huge sign in along the Highway 1, which takes you from north to south and vice versa. It's a cartoon, very bad drawing in those days, of that says, "Children today, the world tomorrow." And that symbolizes what we stand for. And so when you invest in people, they are the children. Children is the way to the future. And it's true to this day. We basically broke the whole lead the way in the hospitality industry and Australian vocational education training and women empowerment. And now, of course, food rescue, which I'll tell you about in a second. But investing in people is the best way. And when you invest in people, you don't stereotype them just because they're street kids. They only deserve this much. We invest in roughly about $10,000 per student. And when we did that, we were under huge criticism because they're street kids. They don't deserve, they're not that they don't deserve, they don't need that much. But then you start looking at parents who put their kids through international school, spend $30,000 without thinking, blinking an eye. Why is it so different? So when you have a vocational training, it's not just vocational training and practical training at our restaurant. It's also about the music classes, the dance classes, the benefiting from a tourism through the camping trips and field trips and going to the bowling. And yes, if you're Asian, you have to sing karaoke as well. All that makes you this value that you instill in people. To make them feel confidence, empowered, and all that kind of stuff. So, number one is investing in people, right? And number two is moving away from this whole charity. You spend so much. If you ask 10 people why they go to Kodo to eat, and you'll find that 77 people out of 10 people will tell you because it's good food. It's a convenient location. It's competitively priced. It's an excellent service. It's a feel-good factor. But that feel-good factor is only that 3 out of 10. People don't go there because it's charity. And like we don't bring people to the school where our kids lived and study. It's because it's not a petting zoo. It's not about when people come in and say, "Aren't they cute?" And we're trying to avoid making partnerships with people that see us as a charity because we're an impact organization that invests in people. So there's a very different mindset when you go in as a charity donor, right? You have a very different expectation to as when you come in as a partner, because it's less roll our sleeve and work together to build a better community and all inclusive world, rather than just say, oh, less aren't they cute? I'm going to give you a couple of thousand and I expect the world. And that's they only deserve this much. So we spend a whole timeline of 25 years trying to change the community, society's mindset about charity. Not to say that charity is wrong, because probably a lot of people do need that handout and things like that. But that's not for us. We don't do that. We invest in people. We're trying to change the mindset of our community, because the social enterprise model can only be strong if the community supports it. They
Yeah, it's
so
about impact,
exactly.
impact on all of those individuals. And last year in season four, we had the pleasure of talking to Hung Dung, of course, who was one of your huge success stories for Koto. So if anyone who's watching the episode today is interested to hear about the life of one of the former street kids whose life Jimmy's organization changed, then I definitely encourage people to watch that. To get a great sense about how that impact on even just one individual. It's an amazing story, Sam. How about over to you?
Sure. I was watching your video on Tech Talk, which talks about the revolution of fishing industry, and you actually mentioned something about your philosophy, which is actually your company name, which is No One Teach One. So
That's right.
I would really love to hear from you. How do you actually go about sharing this philosophy? What does it actually mean to someone who knows your organization for the first time?
Thanks, Sam. So before I answer that, can I just go back very quickly on what Felicity said before? I get a lot asked a lot, Felicity, can you give us all the success stories and all that kind of stuff? And Hung Dung is one of them. Every day when you work in for an organization like Koto, it's such a privilege, because you see people grow visibly and change. And they, to me, if they get a better version of themselves than they were yesterday, that's to me success. Whether it's a street kid to now have a coffee shop and can support his wife and kids, that's success. Or someone like Hung Dang, who studied at Columbia University and traveled the world, that's success as well. But also, there's a very big newspaper called VN Express here that runs monthly a story on a Koto alumni. They've been doing that for the last five stories now. And each story has an incredible, resilient individual that's within that story of how, this street kid that shines shoes now owns his own pizza shop. Or a guy who used to do a Siglo and now owns over 60 bars in Vietnam. Or a simple story as a girl who's an ethnic minority who traveled to Australia, and both her parents passed away. The whole family's passed away, sorry, her brother, which was meant to go to Koto, and now work in Tamworth as the executive sous chef and change her life. So everyone is a success within their own right.
Yeah,
So
great point.
back to your question, Sam. The No One Teach One philosophy started when one of the street kids that I looked after originally got really sick, and I took him to hospital. And he asked me a very simple question as to what do I want from all this after this 4 years of looking after us unconditionally and all that kind of stuff. When you come from an, and you know this more than anyone, Sam, is that when we come from Asia, family is everything. And when your blood and all that kind of stuff plays a very a prominent role. So they don't understand that someone who's not blood related, is not even an uncle, it can love them that much unconditionally. So when after 4 years of receiving, they start to ask that question, what do you want? And honestly, I couldn't give him that answer at that time. And only to go away and thought about it 3 months later, come back to with a reply as simple as, I want you to pay forward. Once help others. But the only way that you can help yourself is through education, knowledge, and empowerment. And that's where the No One Teach One. Now, if you ask the 350 students that we have at the moment, what do they want from, what is their interpretation of No One Teach One? And everyone will have a different answer for you. Because the idea is, when you go in, if you're an older class, you teach the new class. If you're a new class, you teach for the one that never don't know anything. And when you graduate, when you go into the all this hospitality five stars industry, immediately if you tell them that you're Hokkaido and the manager there is most likely will be a Koto as well, you have this instant membership into this community of just helping each other. And it doesn't have to be very complicated as to I need to help like Jimmy, a lot of people. I could just help one person. As simple as that, because if everyone plays a part, then you see that this is something that's incredibly effective, right? That's a ripple effect that you're creating. Additionally, if you look at the evolution of the way we help people, it started off as charity, then it went to CSR, and then it went to social enterprise. Now there's ESG. So everyone, the question begs, people beg the question is that everyone now has a responsibility to look after our fragile planet and the community that lives in it. It's no longer, it's Jimmy's job. Isn't it great? Jimmy's doing this great thing, helping people. And it goes back to the questions, why can't you do something as well? It doesn't have to be wait till you're 60 years old, own five houses, gray hair, have a lot of money to do good. You can do good by doing simple things, simple as one person, you can change their life. Employ them into your company or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds really beautiful. It's such a beautifully simple word, but it's profoundly impactful, and
Exactly.
you can interpret it in so many ways. And I was just wondering, in your decades of journey in this social enterprise, with so many people adopting you, so many challenges, and somehow people take you for a ride in the earlier part where you mentioned, what keeps you going? Is there ever a time whereby you say, okay, this is enough, I'm just going to pack up and go?
This question usually brings tears a lot to me, Sam. So if I become very teary, then you hit the soft spot. For me, is that I feel quite privileged. If you talk about this is 30 years of my work and my life and my legacy. And every time I looked at it, I look back, I feel incredibly privileged because I don't feel like I'm working. I'm feeling that I still talk with Koto with passion. And I know there's not many people in this world who can do that. And that's probably a message within itself for people who want to live with purpose. And I have that. I found that. Of course, there's a lot of hard work to get there, but I did that. So the thing that keeps me up, sorry, that wakes me up each morning and try. And there's days when you have a lot of children in your family and you just, your priority is to feed them. So you're in incredible debt because you can't play the suppliers, can't do that. Because COVID and all that kind of stuff, but you still have this commitment to make sure they're healthy and they're happy. So each morning when I go to work, I get this incredible sea of smile with the greeting of good morning. A simple word as good morning can say thank you for my future. So that's me is why I do the things I do. So that's very important.
Thank you for sharing. I was very moved as well. Yeah, I'm just wondering, in the next phase in your career at this point in time, what would be the next step for you, for yourself, or for the organization?
Yeah. So 95% of our staff at Koto Enterprise alumni. So this whole go back to this whole no one teach one. So Koto is growing. We're building this massive international campus, which is built by one of the a very big Vietnam conglomerates called Vingroup. So we're very privileged, and this allowed us to accommodate about 350 students and their livelihood and do it really well. And of course, the commitment is not for profit. As the team runs, a lot of the team now, head chefs, head trainers, directors, foundations, enterprise financial, or alumni, they're in very capable hands of running Koto. So my job is to expand Koto, expand the impact. And this is where the Viet Harvest comes in and creating this ecosystems of impact. So for the last 7 years, we work with the Australian government, Australian Aid, and women economic empowerment. So we've been doing so well, women in leaderships, women from ethnic minority and rural areas, and all that kind of stuff as well. And we're going into community-based tourism, and we're impact policies as well through this great funding relationship that we have with the Australian government. The priority is to say in 5 years' time, Sam, that through this little tiny project called Koto, that we're able to train over 500 kids, student, underserved youth per year. We're able to rescue over 1,000 tons of food that otherwise would go into landfill and environment. But now we nourish Vietnam, over 1 million people. We can say that we trained over 500 women in leaderships and in getting them jobs. And we can say, finally, we can say that through this tiny little project called Koto, we're able to help the alumni to go on scholarships, overseas placements, economic empowerment, and finally to get them to build capability and capacity for them to become these future leaders into this as well. So that's the next couple of years of goal for Koto, is to widen the impact while maintaining the essence of what Koto stands for, and that is an all-inclusive world where no one get left behind.
It's so beautiful. I really love the work that you are doing. I'm based in Singapore, and I really have to say that we are very fortunate here and a little bit spoiled as well. So I think we have to be involved in some form of work that you are doing in
Yeah.
your bigger organization. Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe one more thing for us before we conclude will be to all our listeners, our audience who is listening to you today. What would be one best career advice that you would give them?
I think to live a life with purpose. That's probably, if you look at how I evolve and how I grew as a human being through this work, Koto gave me so much more than I could possibly give Koto. So it's never about me saying, doing all these great things for Koto. So it's what I've learned in my journey of growth. And that's just been very privileged for me. If you live with sense with purpose, you bring this incredible positive aura around you to people around you. And that creates this ripple of doing good things. And if you live with purpose, you always seem to be have you're more healthier, you might be more mindfulness. So it's all, at the end of the day, it goes back to it's all about you, which is what a lot of our people in this world now is very self-centered. So if you do good, you can actually be self-centered as well, if that makes sense. So if you live with purpose, then everything you do in your work and your life and all kinds of trying to be inclusive to the people around you, and that's how the world can be a better place. And it doesn't have to be in this whole no one teach one Koto. And the clear message is that it doesn't have to go ask you to go and change the world. It asks you, as just says, one at a time.
Exactly. I think when we ask people to live with purpose, the word purpose can be really a very big, bombastic word that sometimes is very hard to digest. Yet you have broke it down so simple for us. It could be just be inclusive, know one, teach one. We can teach somebody who doesn't know. I think that is a very good start if we are still in the pursuit of finding our purpose. Very well shared.
Yes, just to start with just helping one person, and if everyone did that, the world would be a much better place.
Yep.
Great. Jimmy, thank you so much for sharing more about yourself, like where you've come from and the amazing impact. And I really enjoyed when you were talking about what success looks like. Yes, we spoke to Hong Dung. She's on one side of things, but it sounds success is what you think success is. Success is just making a difference and being better than you were yesterday.
Been happy.
And being happy. Fantastic. So thank you again for all your time today. And we wish Koto and VietHarvest and all your endeavors continued success in the future.
Thanks, Felicia. Thanks, Sam. Thank you for giving me a platform.
Thank you so much for your sharing. Have a good day.
Yeah.